everyone. It's been said that every quilt tells a story, and it's so true. But I also believe every quilter has a story to tell. I wanted to hear about the people behind these wonderful quilts and thought you'd enjoy hearing about their lives also. Welcome to A Quilter's Life. I just love visiting with these quilters I have been able to interview, and Carolyn Schmidt was no exception. I'm so excited to share her story with you. I'm sure you'll enjoy this active, retreaded quilter.
Carolyn, welcome to A Quilter's Life. I'm so glad you could be with me.
I have so looked forward to this time with you.
Can you tell me where you were born?
I was actually born in a small town in Kansas called Coldwater. My parental grandparents lived there, my father's mom and dad, and my mom, and through various circumstances, we moved soon after that to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where my dad, I think, had a job there with me doing watch repair. He'd been a farmer, but this is going to sound strange. My parents met in a tuberculosis sanitarium in Merton, Kansas. My dad was getting better. My mom was an arrested tubercular, but she was still there running errands and stuff like that. And they got married while they were there. And both of them, TB is kind of treacherous this way. And of course, they were coming out of the Depression Dust Bowl area. They married in 1940. And thinking about what kind of risk takers they were, it amazes me as I look back on that. But I came along in 1942, and we moved from Albuquerque to Roswell, New Mexico. And no, it wasn't an alien place at the time. But my sister was born there, and 4 months after she was born, I was sent to Denver at 18 months to live, somewhere between 16 and 18 months old. I was sent to Denver to live with my father's sister and her husband for the first time. My sister joined us at a certain point, and then through a different set of circumstances, we were both moved back to Roswell to live with my mom's mom and my mom's sister in 1948, just before my first grade year. And our mom was getting well to come home and be with us, which was wonderful. Our dad had already died. And so mom got well and came home in the summer of 1949. But we, my sister and I, spent that summer on a farm in Olpe, Kansas, over not too far from Emporia, so that mom would have the opportunity to get settled in without a pair of girls who, at 14 months apart, were more like twins.
Yeah.
And lots of energy. So we had a wonderful time that summer on the farm. I loved the farming and everything. It was my grandmother's brother and his wife. But it was a constant case of most of my life of adapting to changes.
Yeah.
Sometimes moving of physical location, oftentimes complete changes of family, sometimes because we added somebody, or sometimes somebody was subtracted from the family, always within the family, but constantly having to adapt to a new set of expectations and rules from my earliest years, actually.
Wow.
And so, but 6 months before our mom died in New Mexico, I was shipped to Denver to live with my aunt and uncle that I'd lived with before. And mom died 6 months later down in New Mexico. And other than visiting with my sister 3 weeks out of every summer, either in Denver or the next year in Roswell, we never lived together again as such.
Wow.
And it was neighbors of the aunt and uncle that raised me who started me at the church, South Presbyterian Church, back in 1953. And I have been a volunteer there. And then the current church that I go to, South Fellowship Church in Littleton, in the shopping center in Littleton, has been my family for 66 of my 77 years.
Wow.
And by the Lord's grace and mercy, here I am doing what I do. I was widowed 11 and a half years ago when my husband, it was pneumonia that went into septicemia and shutting down in 24 hours. There's nothing that could be done. But he is still my soulmate, but I still have incredible amounts of stuff I get to do in relationship with all kinds of people. I have a lot of connections, which and all ages. I do most of the memorial services for our church as a sound and lighting tech because I have a flexible schedule. I don't say I'm retired. I say I'm retreaded. If you know what the retreads were.
Yes, I do. I remember. My husband would get the retreads for tires when we were first married, and people would wave at us and like, what are your tires coming off? So, yeah, I remember those retreads.
Well, that's why I say with retreads, you weren't supposed to go fast on the highway. So as a retread, I've still got rubber on the road, but I don't go as fast as I used to. And what's more, I'm not just busy. I'm active and involved. It sounds so much better. I read recently, busy is just an activity of the body. Active and involved is a decision of everything, every part of you. Engagement with people.
Engagement. Yeah.
And on any given Sunday, I can be hugging somebody that I just did a memorial service for, a child or a husband or a friend or something, and they're sobbing on my shoulder. And I turn around and somebody's four little girls are wrapped around my knees. You can't beat that. And when teenage kids come running for you for a hug, that says a lot.
That is wonderful.
Yeah. So basically, that's kind of my background and how I got where I got.
Did you actually meet your husband there at the church?
No. I worked for the phone company. I started when I was a senior in high school. And I was first a long-distance operator, then a service rep, and then I worked for the sales department, the men who were going out and selling services at Mountain Bell here in Denver. And I met him at a bowling alley.
Okay.
The guys I worked with, I knew their families, and they said, come on out and root for us and sit with our wives and kids and just root for us. And the team that they were on was bowling against a team from AT&T that my then-to-be father-in-law and my husband were bowling on. Well, this was in September of 1964. 6 months later, we got married. I planned on working for the phone company until I was 65 years old and had 48 years of service. when the team championship was bowling off, I had switched teams. But my pastor married us. We eloped essentially to church. And our best man was a friend, a salesman friend of both of ours. He was an Orthodox Jew. And I asked my old Dutch Presbyterian pastor if it was a problem for him to have an Orthodox Jew as a best man. He said, not for me if it's not for him. And Maddie, who was our best man, my aunt was a heavy drinker, and I didn't want at the wedding. Mm-hmm. And my bridesmaid was actually 62 years old. But he said to us, You know, I can understand, Carolyn, why you don't want her there. Maddie said this. But don't do that to Phil's parents. So we told them on Sunday, before the 12th of March, which was on Friday, that we were engaged. And that was his parents and his sister, brother-in-law, and their two kids. And we told them on Monday that we were getting married Friday. Would they like to come? And Mom and Dad did.
Oh, neat.
And it was just perfect. Our pastor loved it because his thought was, so much money goes into a wedding that could be used to help the young couple get a start. And we had just 3 weeks before Phil died, Phil was my husband's name, had celebrated our 43rd wedding anniversary. It would have been our 54th this last spring.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he had just turned 71. Mm-hmm. And yeah, in fact, it was interesting because I was part of a professional quilt group, Long Armors, and we had just hung a quilt show on his birthday. And it was up over Easter, because Easter was the 23rd of March that year. It was really early in 2008. And we took it down after he died. But, yeah, we called ourselves the Quints, and our group was called Quintessentially Excellent, I think we called ourselves, because we were five of us. We were all long-arm quilters, and we called ourselves loving competitors. We would pass off quilts and customers to each other, depending on the kind of quilting we enjoyed doing and the quality of the work, because all of us were top quality in some areas.
Yeah.
And did we love that group together.
Yeah.
Anyway, that gives you kind of a turned up background, but.
Yeah. When we were talking before, you also mentioned you had a long arm business. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was really kind of a fluke. Technically, that was the second business. My daughter and I had a custom clothing business for about a year, but we were both working full-time elsewhere, and that was hard to maintain. But I had made clothes. I had started sewing when I was six by hand, and also started knitting at that time. And so I made clothing for a long, long time. Then we had a business, and both of us got burned out about 1990. Mm-hmm. And she quit sewing entirely, and I decided I was going to make quilts because I had control over the fabric, control over the colors that I wanted to use. There wasn't the emotional or high expectations or that comment that says, oh, I thought it would be less expensive if I had it made.
Yeah.
I said, it is if you make it yourself. But
yeah,
to compensate me for my time, energy, and expertise. So I pretty much stopped making clothes entirely, except when my daughter got married, I didn't make her wedding gown, but I made her three bridesmaids dresses in velveteen and iridescent taffeta.
Oh, wow. And that sounds like hard to work with.
It is. It slips. And
yeah.
You've got to bind the seams. And in those days, you had to either do them by hand or you did have a zigzag. I had a zigzag and I could do that. But, and then I made my suit for the wedding in iridescent taffeta. And then the only other clothing I made for a long time was my ex-daughter-in-law's wedding dress and the vest that my son and his best man wore for the wedding. So I started quilting. I love the log cabin pattern. It's one of my favorites. I love scrap quilting. I love being able to take 70 fabrics and put them together in a quilt.
Yeah.
And log cabin is especially amenable to that kind of thing. So I made them for my son, hand quilted and stuff like that, machine piece, but hand quilted. And then got an opportunity to work for Great American Quilt Factory in 1996. And that fall, they wanted to get a Dammel quilting machine and asked if I would be interested in learning how to run the thing. So in the spring of 97, they sent me to Texas to take classes from Linda Taylor, where she and her husband had a business. She was an amazing teacher and a delightful couple. They also had business selling Dammels. So that's why they sent me there for Dammel training. And then I came back and was to run a business for Great American while training some other people. But the problem is you can't work on a quilt when there are people around. And the machine was in their classroom. So the only time I'd work on it or do any training was from 7 to 9 in the morning when the store opened. And in the evenings, there were classes in there. So Great American, the business next to them was moving out, and they were able to expand, but that meant the machine was on downtime by that fall. And so we had it in parts, and we were holding on to the quilt. And it makes enough noise, they were going to put it back where they were the possibilities people of books and fabrics and stuff like that for many years. And they were going to put it in the back room, and nobody wanted it back there. So they called me in and said, if you would like to buy it and are willing to do our quilts for the books, all of the possibilities books, you know, that they printed. I think I've got 3 dozen of the books over the years. And you can have people bring the quilts into here. They can charge them when they pick them up here, and that comes kind of at the front for your business, but if you want to buy the machine. So my husband and I talked about it, and we bought the machine and moved it to my house, all 14 feet of it. it's an Optimum Dammel, one of the older ones, and it sits in my basement, but fortunately came in piece parts, so we could... That head weighs about 75 pounds.
Oh, my.
And so on. It's something. So it wound up in my basement in October of 1997. And I had a business. And what a lot of people don't understand, that when you have your own business and you work from home, that people don't really think you are working.
Right.
Because you can work anytime you want to. You're working for yourself. And when somebody approached me about volunteering for something that was going on at church that they were just starting up, the daycare center, for maybe 4 hours a couple times a week, I said, no, I can't, because I also work part-time for a quilt store, Great American Quilt Factory. And he said, oh, I didn't know you had a real job too. So, a huge benefit from working from home. I wrote an article for our trade magazine, and one of the things I pointed out is every person I did a job for was my boss until I had that job done.
Yeah.
I wasn't working just for myself. I was working for my clients.
Right.
And they were my bosses. Anybody who has a service business of any sort, that is the case. And again, it's the assumption that you can do some of this stuff for free, and you can't. They wouldn't want to, if they were working for somebody, they wouldn't want somebody to say, well, you know, you're just spending time here, so the work you're doing for us is for free.
Right.
Our time is valuable, and I kind of say it's in some respects, it's comparable to what is said in Scripture, laying down your life for your friends.
Mm-hmm.
We always assume that means taking a bullet for somebody.
Yeah.
The time you spend, because you don't get a refund on time.
No.
You can't go back and reuse it.
Right.
Which is okay. But when you're in a business, they need to pay for that time.
Right.
But I did that consistently professionally until about 2012, and realized that over the years I had collected about $10,000 worth of fabric.
Oh, my.
That was in my basement, because when you work for a quilt store and you get a little extra bonus of a percentage off, and the fabrics come true, and you know that they'll never come true again.
Uh-huh.
You're in trouble. I said, well, I have some, and at least a minimum of 3 yards.
Right.
So they're down there. And then when you have friends who have a business who's making crib sheets for daycare sitters and give you all of the scraps, like 500 pounds worth.
Oh, my. I can't even imagine what your stash looks like.
Oh, you're frightful. But you get under a little pressure, because when you're kids, my daughter, who's 51 now, and my son, who lives with me, when they plan on packing the stairwell, putting a porta potty in the basement, and a dumb waiter out of the kitchen, and I have to sew my way out. If I want to get out of there, they want quilts, not fabric, to dispose of. After the folks from Great American retired, I think around 2005, it Creative Needle is my go-to place, and Marge is still going strong there. The class, as I recall, was down there, and this gal composes songs for quilters.
Uh-huh.
Oh, actually, my church hosted this thing, because I used to host the Colorado Quilt Council.
Okay.
And so I'd run sound for their get-togethers, and this gal and guy were there, and she was talking about, in her songs, how to dispose of your stash so nobody knew where it was. You know, like hide it in the trunk of the car, in the boot above the bed. Oh, I'm not using that freezer. I can stick it in there. But I haven't gotten quite that bad. Fortunately, the basement is pretty well mine. But I do have a number of sewing machines. I have one in my bedroom in case I want to sew in the night. And I have a serger and a sewing machine on the dining room table, because that way I can work. I have 2 sewing machines set up downstairs. I have a featherweight I inherited that I made my first dress on when I was 13. And I love it because it chuckles. It's the epitome for class machines. A good little straight stitch machine. Oh, it's lovely. And then I have 2 sewing machines that I bought for my granddaughters back when they were first learning to sew at 5 and 7, because kids' machines were just driving nuts. And they made their first quilts when they were 5 and 7.
Neat.
One's 20, or going on 20, one's going on 18, and they're both occupied in other things right now. But one of them knits regularly, because I taught her to knit. It's a girl that I have known since she was a junior in high school. And she went to Wheaton and got an undergrad, and then she came back to Denver to go to BU for law school. Somebody had helped her make a quilt, and she asked if I'd finish it for her, which I did. And then she said, could I learn to make quilts too? And so she started coming over several times a month, as often as things worked out. And so she started, and we've been sewing together for 4 years. And we've made a number of quilts. Yeah, we've made a number of quilts to be given to some of the children's organizations. We've got 3 that we gave to Project Linus. And we love using scraps in a variety of ways. She passed her bars on her first go-around and is now in rifle, but she's got one of the sewing machines that I bought for my granddaughters. The reason for that is the 2 sewing machines are out on loan. I'm kind of a sewing machine, cloaking gadget, junkie. My latest thing has been, in order to bring some control out of the amazing amount of scraps, especially, that I have, I now have all 3 sizes of AccuQuilt. the AccuQuilt baby that I've traveled to Oregon with, the regular size, and then I have the large electric one. I'm not into applique generally.
Yeah.
Though I've done some. Basically, I get it for all of the basic shapes that we can do. And when we sew strips and scraps together, then I can cut them in, like, we cut them a lot of times in 3.5 by 6.5 inch ribs. So then we finish out 3 by 6.
Yeah.
And we put them together in a variety of ways. But we've done a lot of that together. And now she wants to get into more complicated stuff. But I put her to work on using triangles on a roll. And she has made me a lovely wall hanging that I need to get the finishing job done on, the quilting and the binding. My favorite part, well, I love all parts of the process, but I love hand finishing the binding. I
put
it on the machine on the front, but I love getting a needle back in my hands. I even still darn socks.
But do you?
Well, they're smart wool, and they're pricey, and if I can keep them going for a while.
That's true. Who introduced you to quilting?
Nobody, really. None of my family made quilts.
What was your thinking process when you thought, I'm going to make quilts?
Well, my mother had made a doll quilt for my Tony doll way back. That's the only quilt that I ever knew that she made. I know we grew up in New Mexico, particularly under tied quilts that had been made of old wool clothes, because there wasn't a lot of heat there, and it surprises people how bitter cold it can get down there.
Uh-huh.
But to see them straightening the grain on fabric and everything, they were really, really good. Seamstresses, my mom and Aunt Carol were especially good. I have some of the clothes, last clothes my mom made me, and the finishing work. Whenever I think I'm pretty good at something, I look at those hand-done buttonholes and the hand finishing and stuff on this. She made shirts for our dad, because our dad was 6'6". And you couldn't find stuff easily for him. And my husband was 6'3" and had long arms. So I made his dress shirts, button-down collar dress shirts, for a long time.
Wow.
When I was pregnant with my daughter, then I decided to use the scraps from the clothes I had made for my maternity. And I made a quilt because out of a pattern that I found in the family circle. And my daughter was born in 68.
Uh-huh.
Well, there was, you know how quilting goes by turns for a while, there's nothing happening, and then all of a sudden it's gone berserk again, and it changes a bit into art quilts, and now it's making a resurgence back into the kind of quilts that wrap you up, that kind of thing. And it does, like a lot of other things, it changes. People want to do something by hand, and some people like process and some people don't.
Yeah.
And some of the faster things that help us do things, like rotary cutters, revolutionized quilting. You know, the acrylic ruler, the self-healing mat, and the rotary cutter, the most dangerous piece of equipment we can possibly use. Oh, yeah. I used to teach at the store the rotary cutting rules. You make a cut and close the blade.
Right.
And that kind of thing. Then I didn't do much of anything like that for a long time. And then after we stopped our other business, I thought, you know, I just really love color, fabric, shape, and process. So I got back into it. And then I hired on with Great American on the basis of the quilt that I made for my 6'5" 25-year-old son. Which, incidentally, now that he is going on 49, is still on his bed in 75 different shades of blue.
Oh, wow. I bet it's
blue
beautiful.
Fabric. It really is. It was a machine pieced and hand quilted. And it's his go-to quilt. But I realized I toyed around with doing some kind of art quilting. I like things that wrap people up. My daughter says, Mom, when I wrap up in a quilt that you've made, it's very different. It's like you're holding me.
Yeah.
And my son always said that if anybody in the family was sick, they always grabbed his quilt to wrap up in. Because it was like being held.
Yeah.
Even when we give them away and have no idea who will get them, both my young friend Lauren and I have the desire to wrap people up. We don't care that it goes out and that we have no idea who gets it. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I have up here with me the last quilt I made for my husband, which is flannel squares, pre-cut flannel squares that we had. And I thought, well, I'll put these in it together kind of random and stuff. But I brought it up here because it does get chilly up here. And,
yeah.
And even though it's comfortable if I'm moving around, if I sit, no matter what, and especially when it's blowing here in Estes right now, it gets cold.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just reading, and a voracious reader, you would call it, of just about anything that helps me learn something. My collection of quilting books is, the other one is my collection of theological books.
Uh-huh.
And I've got people who are fighting for when I die.
Oh, no.
But they're telling me I won't die for another 40 years. So.
Oh, probably not.
I
have a lot to do.
Yeah, in order to keep from being walled up in the basement, right?
Over the years, do you have a favorite quilt?
Most anything log cabin.
Mm-hmm.
But when you come right down to it, basically anything that's a half square triangle is technically the same kind of thing as a log cabin. It just doesn't have the steps.
Yeah.
Because you've got a light side and a dark side, and you can actually do the same pattern structure with half square triangles that you can do with log cabin, and they're pretty vast, the amount of patterns you can do and the way you can use them. And then the one that I do have, I took a class from Laura Schwartz Smith on painting faces on fabric with second Mikhail ink. And the Quince, we had a challenge one time, and the Crayola crayons were the challenge. So we had a parameter for size, and we had to come up with something that displayed our ideas of Crayola crayons. And what I did with this is I did my paternal grandmother's face on muslin in, not colors, but the old sepia-colored photos. And my four-year-old face on another piece of muslin. I pre-quilted a background that looked like a starry night. I did English paper piecing in grandmother's flower garden pattern in old reproductions of the 1930s fabrics.
Yeah.
1930s, 40s fabrics. And applique that on, applique the pictures on, put on primary colored buttons, and it was a story of why I loved Crayola crayons. The smell of them, the feel of them, everything.
Uh-huh.
Because when we were visiting there one time, she had a brand new box of the 8 Crayola crayons in the 40s and a new coloring book. And to this day, I still love Crayola crayons.
Oh, cool.
That was a story quilt that I made. But that's one of the few things that I've ever done that would be considered an art quilt. Mostly everything I've got around, I've used leftover log cabin squares. Usually I make a multiplicity of the squares, far more than is needed for the actual quilt. I made a log cabin for my maternal aunt, my mom's sister, who I was named for her 80th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
But I had so many of the squares left over because it was a scrap quilt.
Yeah.
That I was able to make 2 more quilts. One of them I went out as a fundraiser for a friend who was going on a missions trip. And a wall hanging and another quilt yeah, just with the leftover scraps. And I'm that way with a lot of stuff like that. I usually can get two or three quilts out of whatever I made a scrap quilt out of.
Wow.
I'm talking queen size.
Yeah. I'm laughing because I just was at the quilt shop and getting material for two quilts I need to make for twin nieces that were just born.
Oh.
But I calculated all out, and the shop owner was kind of laughing at me that, you know, I'm buying just what I need. So I'm thinking, there's no way I was going to have scraps to make more quilts out of this. I just tried to picture being able to make two or three more quilts out of some of these scraps. It's not happening here.
Well, you know, I think it comes back from a fondness for the 30s fabrics. Mm-hmm. There used to be a quilt store up here called Maggie Mae's, and she carried the best assortment of Aunt Gracie's ever. But she retired some years ago. I think if she's still alive, she's in her 90s now. But she started her business when she was 62 years old.
Really?
And whenever I was up here, I always got whatever the latest Aunt Gracie's was. So I probably have 250 up and down there. But I also, when I worked at Great American, we made special rolls and stuff of Civil War. And I have a Civil War quilt that I got the top together, but one of the things I love to do is to make the backs interesting. And so somebody can turn them over.
Yeah.
And there's something fun on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still haven't gotten that one done because I've been working with this other stuff.
So what are your UFOs usually? Do you have a lot or just a few?
I was in a 13-month color class some years ago, and some of our projects for that class are unfinished.
Mm-hmm.
I may or may not finish them.
Yeah.
I have some leftover blocks from here and leftover blocks from there, and figuring out how I want to use them for whatever. I'll look at them, and I make design walls out of half-inch foam board covered with either felt or flannel.
Uh-huh.
And in my dining room, I have three 30 by 40 pieces of foam board screwed to the wall. And the reason I do that is because the fabric will hold to that, but if I need to pin something up there, the pin has a half an inch to go through.
Yeah.
Very easy to do. I go to the art supply store, professional art supply store, and get the foam board, and then I cut it in sections if I need to. In fact, I have half of one of those here because I brought it up because I was putting together some blocks for a quilt just to have them ready to go. I didn't bring a sewing machine this time. It wasn't that purpose. But this one is covered with gray felt, and I'd put thumbtacks through the back and then duct tape it on the back, and it fits perfectly in my car. So I can have my basic flannel graph here for my fabrics. And so I'll take out some of these blocks and take a look at them. I had started a quilt for my husband the January before he died and ultimately finished it two summers ago. It was triangles on a roll, three-inch finished squares, and half square triangles. One a multiplicity of blues and the other a multiplicity of reds, which you love both of those colors.
So, do you have a favorite color you'd like to work with?
Whatever works well together. For wearing purposes, I wear usually blues, teals, greens, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Those are my favorite live-in colors. But I like any kind of color that works well together. I do flowers in watercolor pencil. I love to work with watercolor pencil because you can take it anywhere with a water cartridge brush, and I use a sepia-colored Pigma pen, draw the thing, and then I can People find it fascinating to watch a brush turn colored pencil marks into watercolor. That I wind up, even if I'm taking a quilt sometimes down to the coffee shop to finish a binding, it always opens a conversation. The best ways to open a conversation. And working with the artwork I do does the same thing. You connect with everybody. I love connecting people to people. And quilts do that. They bring up memories for people's lives, no matter how young or old they are. I'll take on just about any color as long as it works well with any other color.
We already talked about you like the binding.
Oh, I do. It brings up good memories of sewing with people. Favorite tools? Like I said, I'm pretty much of a quilting tool junkie. Bookstores, used bookstores, Amazon, and quilt stores are my... Oh, dear. In fact, I've been snowed in, like I told you, since I got up here. We had 3 days of snow. Today it is sunny, but the wind is brutal. So I have pretty well stayed inside with a knitting project, an art project, a basic layout that I was doing on a quilt, and a lot of books that I was working on. But I have the three main areas in Estes Park and Lyons that are my go-to vices, I haven't been able to get to. So I've had to be disciplined.
Yeah, well. What was your worst quilting experience?
Technically, I've had two of them. On my lawn arm, I was quilting a quilt for somebody on my lawn arm. I do a lot of meandering because it holds the quilt, it holds the batting. For the quilts I donate, I usually wash them before they go out, not before I make them, because then nobody will be afraid of washing them. This one had a muslin backing, and as I rolled up the finished area, I saw this black mark. And I thought, oh, no, I had quilted a moth. It had crawled in between the batting and the backing.
It wasn't on the back. It was inside.
No, yes. and I had to rip it out and vacuum it out and then clean it up, OxyClean or OxyClean or something, towelette. Cleaned it all up, and then I carefully rinsed that little area with water, let it dry, and quilted it back, and they never knew.
Wow.
And then I had it happen one time when I was quilting a quilt, and I noticed something. I thought, oh, my gosh, this thing has leaked oil on there because it was coming up from where the needle was going in.
Uh-huh.
When I rolled the quilt... A spider had gotten in there.
Oh,
and this
no.
spider had been stitched through live about three times. And I had to do the same thing again. And at speed I'm running that thing, which is about 2,000. I can run it at 3,000 stitches a minute, but I run it at about 2 because otherwise it causes vibration.
Uh-huh.
I can put in 2 minutes what takes 45 to rip out.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, I'm thinking, how big was that spider if he got 3 stitches in him?
Well, I had been doing hearts, which meant that I came down to the curve and came back out of the curve and then came back and took on to the next direction I was going to go.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever seen the cartoon Garfield.
Yeah.
It was the old cartoon, and when they killed the spiders, the legs were splayed all over
everybody. Yeah.
But you can't tell when the thing is there there is a little bit of space and they can crawl in there.
Yeah.
I have spider traps everywhere down there.
Oh, my. Don't
touch anything else that might be flying. And, you know, it's annoying enough when it's your own, but it's when it's a client's quilt.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I'm thinking if you backstitch over that had been extra hard to take out.
Yeah, there are certain tricks to it, but it does take a lot out. And then you have to thumb run over the stitches to close the holes.
Uh-huh.
And there are certain fabrics I wouldn't work on. I've done some quilting on silk, but I've also done some on satin. And satin, like I did with wedding gowns, once you put a hole in it, it's just like in paper.
Yeah.
That hole is there forever. And so
mm-hmm.
I don't tackle the really classy art quilts at all. My machine is not one of the computerized ones because
mm-hmm.
It's a different discipline of learning how to plan the pattern and then they can get the machine going and it does its thing and you can do some other stuff. But mm-hmm. I never quite wanted to be away from the quilt. I love doing quilts, especially memory quilts for people, photos of them, or t-shirt quilts for people over the years because I got to know the people through their pictures or something similar. And it's about the people for me.
Why do you make your quilts?
Nowadays, and not all of my family members have quilts for me. I do have some that can sort out and decide what they want to do eventually with them. But not everybody appreciates something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now pretty much I make them so I can give them away somewhere. I have one right now that I'm working on, and I found a fabric that I can use with it to give kind of an opal effect because her name is Opus.
Uh-huh.
And it's for a baby that's about a year old, and it's the new daughter of somebody who works with my daughter. Another comment had been made by two of the gals that had children was that everybody gives them heirloom quality stuff that you don't dare use. And so I made them scrap quilts that they could drag around.
Yeah.
And so I have for three of the kids, two little girls in one family and a boy, and now this one will go to his newborn sister, who's, like I say, going on a year probably by the time she gets it. They are scraps from some of the stuff that my friend who makes daycare cribs use for daycare centers. She has the license on them. So technically, although she's given them away to me, I could not use them for sale. And I don't sell them anyway. But they sent me at Christmas time last fall a composite picture of those kids. Everywhere they go, they drag those quilts.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah. And that's what I love to see happen.
Me too.
Every time I've made a quilt like that, for just to give to a friend for their baby to give. And every one of them says they come back and say the kids just don't let go of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to see happen. And that's kind of why I do it.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're looking at doing some for some of the refugee communities here. People who after years have finally gotten a place and have nothing. Have nothing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to wrap them up. So
that would
I've
be
got
great.
Some friends who are missionaries to the refugees. And that to me is, that's what it's for.
Yeah.
I do it. One fun thing I got to do quite some years ago, and somebody's on my case now to write a little book about it. I was asked to teach a class for MOC years ago. On the similarities between making quilts and raising children.
Huh.
And I did. And some of these kids are graduates from college now that were toddlers in that MOPS class years ago. And I had somebody the other day saying, would you please either write a book or plan out a teaching thing so you can come in and talk to them about how to teach a MOPS class. So the similarities between making quilts and raising children. Can you imagine how I view this?
Now I'm trying to picture it.
Okay. When you make a quilt for somebody, you make it for them.
Yeah.
And if the person in question likes green and you love yellow, you make a green quilt.
Yeah.
So like for your child, you're raising a child that is an individual. And you're not raising an extension of yourself. And then what you do is you get the very best quality of materials that you possibly can afford because you're making it to last a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're working on with your child. But I showed the quilt that I made for my son, the blue one I was telling you about,
uh-huh.
The blue log cabin. I said, yeah. It took me 2 years to make this. And all the moaning and groaning, I said, it took 18 to raise him.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a little different perspective. Then I showed them a block that I was making for a quilt for an anniversary for my daughter and son-in-law. Their 10th mm-hmm. anniversary coming up at the time. They just celebrated their 28th. And I said, this is the first block of 30 that I had to make. But I also then would need to put together the sashings and the borders and all the other finishing work that will have to go on. It'll be a while before she gets that quilt. And she was actually in the room at the time. My daughter
yeah.
was. They were still living here. I said, but you know, I really love this block. And that equates to loving your child at the place they are right now. And we said,
yeah.
we're so anxious when we look at our child and we want the two-month-old to be potty trained. And we want the two-year-old to perform like a four-year-old. And instead of just relaxing into enjoying the child at the age they are, we try to hurry the process. And making quilts is a process. And it can be hurried. But at one point, I said, there comes a point in a quilt that you're making that sometimes you just cannot correct the problem and you have to rip it out and start it over. And I said, that's like asking forgiveness of your child. Because a lot of times we as parents assume that if we ask forgiveness for a screw-up with our child, we've lost authority. And I said, this is different. And I gave him a couple of examples. One of my son-in-law when he was 5, and his father had disciplined him in error. And his mother said, you need to go in and make your father feel better. And another one with my husband and my daughter,
mm-hmm.
who was also about 5 years old at the time. He had told her not to do something. And when he came back, it looked like she had done it specifically, that she'd been riding a trike around the place where he was doing some furniture repair, and he'd poured the furniture stripper in the glass. And he said, don't go near it because it spills. It'll ruin the top of this thing. He came
yeah.
back, and the glass was sitting upright, and the furniture stripper was all over the top of it. And he said, Lisa, I told you not to do it. She said, Daddy, I didn't. He said, well, here's the evidence. So you did it. She said, Daddy, I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's worse. She's lying about it. So he sent her upstairs still crying. I didn't do it, Daddy. I really didn't do it, Daddy. He went downstairs to clean up the mess, picked up the glass. It was one of those clear plastic glasses where the bottom is glued in. And the
okay.
furniture stripper had softened the glue, and it had seeped out in the bottom of the glass. Liesl hadn't done a thing.
Wow.
She had told every bit of the truth. It was his error, and not a deliberate one, but it was his error. He shot
yeah.
up those stairs 3 at a time, burst into her room. She's sobbing. He said, honey, you told me the truth. It was my fault. It wasn't your fault. Will you please forgive me? And she goes, so did you, Daddy. Nobody's perfect. But let me tell you, the trust in her father was sky high.
Yeah.
Because of that. And that's what we have to do sometimes. And
for
then
sure.
I went on with various things. I talked about putting the pieces together. And then I talked about finishing well.
Mm-hmm.
And then releasing the quilt to the person it was made for.
Releasing it is hard sometimes, I'm finding.
It is. Because you're not sure they're going to handle it well
mm-hmm.
or appreciate the time and the energy and the love that went into it. So we have to release love all the time.
Yeah, well, sometimes I'm finding after spending the time with it, I've fallen in love with it, and I have to give it away.
Particularly if you've deliberately made it for somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the quilts I have not been made for somebody else, and it's okay. Eventually, they'll go out. I want to go through the whole batch that I've used for some of our quilt shows and wash them so that they would be safe for other people to wash. And once they're out of my house, they're not mine.
Right.
Not mine anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do with them, but that's their lives too. Having to release your kids into a life of their own is hard.
Yeah, it is.
And sometimes because we're not too conscious, we're concerned about how well we've done, and we'd like to sometimes be able to change or repair or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to let them know. I'm watching it with my granddaughters now, watching some of the mistakes they made and stuff, and working at remembering when I was 17 going on 18 or 19 going on 20.
Yeah.
And although our culture and our times move even faster and faster and faster, and they have all this opportunity to connect with people that they still don't really connect with, the emotions inside are not all that different.
No.
And I do remember being those ages because I'm all the ages I've ever been to this point. It's a good reminder for me.
Yeah. What tips would you give to others?
Strive for quality, but not perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Make your quilt solid. The thing I would recommend is fill your seams well. But if the corners don't totally match up, don't panic over that. It's what I called Mama Schmidt's lecture at the quilt store was, perfectionism has stopped more people from attempting more things that they might enjoy than anything I think I know.
Yeah.
Because they're so afraid they won't do it perfectly. I've known people throw away their first quilts because they weren't perfect.
Oh, no. Oh, that's sad.
And it's a learning process all the time. I still want my quilts to hold together well,
mm-hmm.
but I doubt that anybody's going to know if it's a few threads off.
Right.
Or if I have to square it up.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to last a long time, but it's not going to be show quality. It's not going to be down at Houston competing for some of the incredible prizes that Paula Chatelaine or some of the other people that I know that have. I've got friends that have quilts that wound up in American Quilt Society calendars, that kind of thing, including people that I worked with.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have the time or energy to spend 22 hours putting on a binding so it looks like one perfect stitch, you know?
Yeah.
That's not where I'm at. I'm not particularly competitive because what happens to me is I think of the other people that put in all this time and effort and they didn't win.
Yeah.
I've occasionally, not in quilt shows, but I've won occasionally compliments or comments.
Mm-hmm.
And I've lost grossly. But at the same time, that's not why I had it in there. It wasn't for prizes.
Yeah.
It was for enjoyment.
Uh-huh.
I think I gave you the tip on how to make a design board.
Yeah.
And that one's, that's fun to make. If you ever, anybody ever wanted to know, it's not a major pattern. It's just something. Innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Is a great thing when we're making quilts and working with stuff. If I don't have what I need, what can I make do with? That's what the old book about using it up, wearing it out, making it do, or doing without.
Uh-huh.
An old book. And I came up from a time where, since I told somebody recently, if we had known back in the day that ratty-looking jeans would become a fashion statement, we saved them all and had a fortune. Mine became ratty because I was crawling around under sheep and milking cows and climbing ladders and digging in the garden, and the knees went out and they got patched. And now they spend a fortune for genes that are frayed from the thigh all the way down.
Yeah. When those were first coming out, this one lady in our church, she didn't have very much, but she saw this girl with the holes in her jeans, and she was going to give her money because she thought she needed new jeans. And here they were probably, she probably paid a whole lot for them.
Oh, I've seen them for size 5 children. It was $35 with the frays all the way down. And I'm thinking, you know, the jeans that I have like that, I have cut up, I'm going to make a wall pocket out of. Or a green bag that I can carry to the grocery store. I love doing those things. Reusing them. Nancy's Notions has some great books for recycling and repairing and stuff like that.
I'll have to look into that.
Oh, take a look at them. She's got how to repair jeans, how to recycle jeans, green crafts and everything. Of course, she's gone now, but but the company that has it, you go on the books and looking for the stuff to do. And so I've been cutting up jeans so I can make that. And I'm going to be teaching a friend how to make a rag quilt. Hey, you know, these are perfect to make a rag quilt out of jeans for your car.
It's
easy warm because nothing penetrates them.
Right.
Oh, dear.
Thank you so much for being with me here today. I really appreciate and enjoyed visiting with you.
Oh, I tell you, this has been a joy for me, and I thank you for the opportunity.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of A Quilter's Life. You can find more stories on aquilterslife.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts so each episode will be downloaded automatically. Thanks for listening.